Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Good Lion Podcast. I'm Aaron Salvato.
And I'm Brian Higgins.
And man, it's been a while since we've recorded. How long has it been since we've recorded, Brian, together?
Since we've recorded, it has to be at least 6 weeks.
Oh my gosh. I've missed it. I miss you. I miss doing this.
I've missed this too, man.
It's the highlight of my week, but it's been such a busy time recently, dude. Have you felt that way? Like, has it been ridiculous?
Yeah, it's been this weird mixture of it feels ridiculous and I feel like so much time is going to so many things.
Yes.
And then I look back at a day in particular, or even I look back on a full week and I think, what did I accomplish? did I do anything? Like, I felt like I was doing stuff the whole time and I was tired every night.
Yeah.
And I also felt like I didn't do anything.
Been there, done that. Man, dude, it's tough. I think if you're tuning into this episode hoping for our usual deep dive into theology and Christian thinking and looking at the troubling questions of COVID-19, this probably isn't going to be that episode for you, but this is an episode where Brian and I just are going to get real and hopefully relatable about our struggles lately, which is everything going on with all of the problems in the world. I think it would be good for us just to decompress and talk about it.
This is the episode where if you've ever seen the meme or the tweet version or whatever, that is like the oldest thing I've ever said, the tweet version. Of something. Either way.
I remember the tweet version.
Exactly. That's how I felt I said it as it was coming out of my mouth. If you've ever seen the meme that says that middle-aged men or men in general, I don't know why I called us middle-aged. That's, I think, the tweet version of what I saw. That men have podcasts so that they have an excuse to call their friend and have an hour-long meaningful conversation.
Yeah.
We're going to live that this time. Like, I have felt that that's what we do most of the time, but that's really what we're going to do this time.
Yeah.
And so if you wanted to be on that call, congratulations.
Yeah,
you made it. Welcome to the call.
I wish I could say that you and I, Brian, have called each other every week faithfully just to talk in the last 6 weeks, but we've only really done that like once, I think, just to catch up.
Maybe twice.
And
I think the second one was like interrupted a little bit and it was shorter than we both thought it was going to be.
Right.
And that's just kind of been the nature of what these 6 weeks have been. I'm using 6 weeks as like a rough time marker, like really from the beginning of June.
Welcome to Keeping Our Friendship Alive, the podcast. yeah, dude. Okay.
Let's do it.
So, okay. What's going on with you? Can you give us just a really rough recap of what your life has been like the last 6 weeks? What's new with Brian and Victoria Higgins?
So much is new with Brian and Victoria Higgins. So as of March, just to go back and try to remember what my last semblance of normal felt like, in March, before we learned that Tom Hanks was diagnosed with coronavirus, which to me is when all this got real.
Yeah, that's how I judge time is based on what goes on with Tom Hanks.
Yeah, definitely. So pre-Tom Hanks COVID. So
PTH?
That's good. I was trying to come up with the BC version, but you did it much better. So PTH, I was living in California. My wife and I were both working at Calvary Chapel Bible College. And we had a semester full of students. That feels strange now, just the fact that there were so many people on one campus. We used to run a home group, which is when I learned. That's when I went from being PTH to ATH after Tom Hanks. It was at home group, and there were like 45 people in our living room. It was like the exact opposite of social distancing, which is interesting because I remember when we were doing that home group, I would look at things and think, how many people can we pack into as small a space as possible? And now the rest of life feels like a rebuke of that moment happening.
Oh my gosh.
So being at a small college, it was a really difficult time. We had to send students home so that they could be safe and they could be with their families. And fortunately, through some really good leadership and through some really great wisdom being on display, not through me, through other people. I'm complimenting others at that moment, not saying like, here's how I did great. Through some really great leadership and wisdom, students were sent home before things really turned into a full-on crisis, like before we got into the harshest lockdown and things along those lines. So
yeah, you guys handled it well.
It was really well timed. It was very well done. And looking into, you know, March and April, I was working at home during those times. But because of the way that this is affecting so many companies, but particularly nonprofits and colleges, a lot of colleges are looking ahead to this upcoming fall and are predicting that a lot more students are going to be taking gap years than had ever taken it in the past. The whole idea of going and getting your college experience is very much in jeopardy for a lot of people right now.
Right.
So in response to that, a lot of layoffs needed to be made. And my wife and I were two of those layoffs. So we ended up losing those jobs out at the Bible College. We had all of our family very centralized in New Jersey, which is part of what made it so difficult when we left, because we were leaving a really tight-knit, geographically close group of people. Like, our family is not very spread out. It really all is, you know, from the house that we're staying in right now, which is Tori's parents' house. You know, we are within 25 minutes of all of our immediate family members, you know, in any direction. So we really thought and prayed, you know, Lord, do you want us to find a new thing to do in California? But that really felt like it was going to be establishing roots all over again.
Yeah.
And we had always left for California with the intention of coming back to New Jersey, and specifically with the hope of coming back to New Jersey to church plant at some point.
So cool.
So the more we thought about it, the more we prayed about it, the more we were like, Lord, this is what we believe that long-term vision for us is. You clearly opened the door for us to come to California, and we were really content and we really loved the ministry we were doing and we loved all the things that we were able to accomplish out there. And we could have definitely settled and stayed there for a bit longer. Mm-hmm. We were planning on doing that, but this felt like a really clear movement of, all right, Lord, you've showed us where you want us to be long-term. And you're moving us there in a pretty rapid, dramatic fashion. But that is often the way that you do things. So so we got back to New Jersey in the middle of June. We've been back from the time we're recording this about a month. Fortunately, a lot of the connections that we've had in New Jersey, we've been able to pick them up, you know, right where we left off. My wife, Tori, is a hairstyler by trade. Hairstylist. That's the term that I should be using.
She's a styler of hair.
She's a styler of hair, and she was able to pick up at the styling of hair building that she worked at previous to our West Coast exodus. So PTH. It worked out great. Yeah. PTH. She got to go back to her PTH salon in the ATH time period that we live in now. She even ended up getting like a really nice schedule at that particular salon, which was better than when we lived here before. So that's really cool. Like that's said, we have had the hope and dream of church planting. And right now I'm spending a lot of time kind of processing what that means and what that should look like. And how do you begin a new group of people who gather in a time where gathering is illegal? And how do you think through those different things? And there's so much to process and pray through. So we're taking it super, super slowly.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, I am on the job hunt in central New Jersey. And it turns out that job hunting in a time where when you ask, how's the economy goes, what economy, isn't really all that great. So it's been a little difficult trying to get some traction in different places. But fortunately, you know, one of the things that I've really had to wrestle with God is like, Lord, this doesn't feel like you're providing.
Yeah.
You know, especially when we first got back to Jersey, I was like, God, this doesn't feel like you providing.
Yeah.
And God had to very gently and lovingly push on me a little bit.
Yeah.
And he said, what do you need that you don't have? And I was like, you know what? You're right, Lord. Like, you are providing. I'm just so used to God doing it through my paycheck, through me and working and saying, look at what I've accomplished.
And it's like the question of God saying, you know, what do you need that you don't have? In my mind, it sometimes translates to, at least the way I think of it is like, well, what do I want that I don't have? And in the last 2 years for me of doing missionary work and working from home, like I'm kind of doing what you're doing, but I've been doing it for a while now. And it's like the thing that I constantly in my flesh go, I want is salary and benefits and stability and not having to hustle, you know? So, but yeah, it's like,
definitely.
But I do have everything I need, and I have consistently had everything I need when I really think about it. So anyway, I didn't mean to hijack what you were saying.
No, you're good. It's something that I think, you know, we're touching on it really quickly, but I think it's a lesson that a lot of us are very rapidly learning where there's a lot that we've lost. There's a lot that we used to have that we trusted in and took comfort and solace in that COVID has taken away. And so
stinking COVID,
that's the story of this whole year. I mean, it's interesting trying to work through. We so quickly determine what we need, like you're saying, through the lens of what we want.
Yeah.
And through the lens of, well, what do the people around me have?
Yes.
You know, like we don't want to be the poor person on the block.
Yeah.
Even if being like, you could be the poor person on the block in Beverly Hills.
Right.
And you certainly have everything you need, but you still feel like you're lacking.
Yes.
And so sometimes I look at the house that I get to live in. I look at the car that I get to drive. I look at the food that I get to eat. And I have to kind of remind myself, I'm doing so much better than I deserve to do, even with what I feel like I've lost. And in the grand scheme of things, God is completely providing for all of my needs.
Yes.
I just need to learn that he only ever promised my needs, not my wants.
Yeah, totally. And I don't know if you do this, but do you ever compare where you're at in life right now to where your parents were at your age that you currently are?
I do that sometimes. I don't do that specifically with my parents, but I do that with the generational gap. Like one of the things that I love doing is like Googling average house price 1970. Like I love doing that kind of stuff. And it's super frustrating. And like, you know, what was college tuition? What were gas prices? Like, I love kind of looking up that kind of stuff and trying to reimagine what that would have been like. I don't specifically put it for like, okay, well, my parents bought a house at this age. Therefore, I need to do that. But I do that with my older siblings.
Dude,
so like whenever my older brother does something, I think, all right, I got 4 years and then I need to be there. And that's
same principle.
I do that a lot with him and even with Tori's older brothers who are a little bit older than us and all of them now own houses.
Yeah.
And now it's like, all right, well, the last one just bought a house. So I got to be there in like 2.5 years. And I think that more specifically.
It's the same principle. Like for me, what always gets me in trouble in my flesh is I'm like, okay, when my dad was my age, you know, which is 31, he had a house. I'm pretty sure it was a 2-story house. He was pastoring a church and he had 2 kids at that point, you know, me and my sister, Amy. So it's like, it gets me because I'm like, oh, I'm 31. I don't own a house. I'm renting and it's only a 1-story house. Never mind, you know, it's actually a 3-bedroom house in Oklahoma with like a huge backyard with really cheap rent because it's in Oklahoma. But for some reason in my flesh, I'm just like, I need more. So
can I flip the script on you a little bit?
Yeah.
I have known. So you've been renting that house in Oklahoma for, is it two years at this point?
2 years. Yeah.
Okay. And then out at Vista, were you also renting a house out there before you moved to Oklahoma?
We were. And that was a really unique situation where, dude, God's just provided. Like we ended up with it was a small house, 2 bedrooms with like a decent little backyard. And we used it for ministry. We had the youth group over for house church every week. But the rent was so cheap. And I had friends who were paying more than what we were paying for a studio apartment in California. So it's yeah, dude, California's crazy. But yeah.
So I've known, I knew that you had the house in Oklahoma that you were renting. And I was pretty sure about the house in Vista.
Right.
And ever since I first heard about the house in Vista, I've compared to you.
Oh, no.
And I've been like, he's actually in a house. Oh, like, man. All I've been able to do is apartments.
See, that's the thing.
So comparison just runs deep.
It's like all relative.
Whenever anyone is even slightly ahead of you and like, I know that we have a slight age gap, but I've always looked at us as like friends on the same playing field, not as like, all right, well, he's like 16 months ahead of me. So it's like, I don't bother like getting down to that kind of divide.
Yeah.
But it is easy to be like, all right, well, he doesn't have the excuse. Like sometimes I can put the excuse on of like, well, those other people aren't getting a ministry salary. But then I've looked at you before and I've been like, well, he is.
Right.
Oh, man, what am I doing? Like comparison just runs so deep.
Yeah.
Within us.
Yes, it does. It does. It is. It's the worst. And I'm always doing it. And it's encouraging to know that you're doing it as well. And it's something I'm trying to break out of for sure. But before we get any more into that, let me just give you guys a nutshell of what's been going on with me. I'll try to do it quick so we can spend time on other things. Things have been very busy for me. As some of you guys who listen know, I work part-time for Calvary Global Network as the director of the Good Lion Podcast Network, which is a job I'm super thankful opened up when we started Good Lion. It was just a ministry dream, and now it's a part-time job for me, which is awesome. And I also work for them as their senior web strategist, and that's just kind of a fancy term for somebody who oversees all their websites and is in charge of any projects or developments that involve the internet or web stuff. So recently, we've been planning this international conference, which we do every year, that has missionaries and pastors all around the world come to get encouraged and equipped. But because of COVID, we had to switch to an online conference, which, you know, for me as the web strategist, since it's an online conference, the duty kind of fell to me to really be the guy to think through and, you know, strategize how we're going to pull off the conference in an online manner. So yeah, there's just been so much to do. It's been so stressful. And we actually were supposed to have the conference this week. So we were really working hard to get it done. And then somebody on our team got sick and it kind of threw off everything. And she actually got COVID, but thankfully she's better now. She's all healed up. But yeah, it just, everything got thrown off. So now we've postponed the conference to August, and it's just been a ton to do. It's still a ton to do, but I've got a good team I'm working with. My coworkers are amazing. And we've all been kind of on a weekly basis putting our heads together to think, how can we make this online experience the best it can possibly be given the circumstances? Like, you know, how can we avoid just pre-recording video and throwing them up on a website and saying like, here you go, enjoy. How can we go beyond that to provide people with some sort of like online experience that connects them to other people and has an element of interaction and community? So that's been the big thing for me lately. It's been, you know, quite the web strategy job. So I've been very busy with that. It's been absorbing a ton of my time. And then on top of that, over the past month or so, I've been looking for another job, another part-time job. My wife recently lost her job due to COVID. So I felt the need to kind of, you know, pick up the slack because I really don't want her getting a job that would put her at risk of going out into the community a ton right now. I would much rather that her and I could continue to work from home just to be as safe as possible from the virus, because her grandma and her mom, several people in her family are at risk of COVID. So I just really don't want my wife to end up in a job where she has to like go out in an environment where she could contract it and then spread it to someone in her family. And I just know that for her, she would not feel safe visiting her family. And I really want her to be able to do that right now. So I've just kind of taken it upon myself to try to step up and make up the difference. And so I've gone back to looking for an additional part-time job. One avenue I've been looking at is there's a tech startup company that's interested in me possibly doing some web design work for them and some graphic design, which would be great. But there's another opportunity which I'm way more interested in. It's actually a job that you told me about. There's a church that's interested in hiring me part-time to be their pastor of discipleship over their internship department, which would be like a total dream come true, especially because they'd be willing to let me work for them in California, but do it remotely from Oklahoma and basically run this weekly discipleship program through online methods, which is something I've kind of had experience with over the last 2 years, running both Good Lion and just doing a ton of online ministry since we moved out here. So it's something I feel like we could do. And yeah, I'm really hoping that this job is the one that I can pursue. It's been a long interview process. I've been talking to the guys for like 6 weeks now, but I've been told that I'm supposed to get some sort of answer by Monday. So yeah, here's hoping for that. And that's why I've been so busy lately.
Yeah, that's a lot to be working through and thinking through. And I guess with all the stuff that you've been doing and with how being remote and the world's trying to go remote hasn't taken any work off of your plate. If anything, it seems like it's added a significant amount to it. Do you get frustrated when you hear people talking about, like, look at all the time we have now? And you're like, I have no time at all.
Oh, I've been frustrated about that since week one when COVID started. I heard several people who were like, oh, man, you know, I got nothing to do. I just sit around all day and, you know, I've got time off. And for me and for most of the people I know who work in ministry, it felt like all of the work on our plate doubled. I know for my dad, who leads a church in Vista, it was like, how do we continue to preach and minister to our community? But then also, like, we have to build an entire media department now to effectively communicate through social media and Facebook even more than we already do. Like, how do we shift our entire strategy of reaching people, basically? So for me, yeah, my workload's been huge and it's been a lot, but I'm just thankful to have work, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Even though I'm not full-time anywhere, I don't have benefits, like I still have to freelance and hustle. God is seriously so provided, like, so much. It's been incredible. And, you know, I really in my heart want that stability to know where my income is going to come from, like, over the next 6 months. Like, I'd love to be able to just know. But when I look on the last 2 years, I'm like, dude, God has provided. He really has. It's been a struggle of faith a lot, but he has provided for sure.
That's great, man. That's so encouraging to hear.
Yeah, dude, he'll do the same thing for you. I'm totally confident. I know that you're going to end up where you're going to need to be for this season. And it's probably not going to look like at all what you thought this season of life was going to look like, but it's still going to be good for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk a minute about June and why we didn't put out much content in June. I will say that a big part of it was June was probably one of the strangest, most challenging, and most depressing months of this year. Do you feel that way at all?
Yeah, June was rough. That might be the understatement of my life, just to call June rough.
It is the worst. Let's take it off the calendar. Let's ban June.
I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that. That would be totally fine by me.
I feel like a big part of it was June was the month that, at least for me and my wife, we started to really realize that the virus wasn't going to be getting better anytime soon. Like, even if you go back to, like, when you and I started doing episodes talking about COVID, like, which feels like a year ago, there was this heart or attitude or hope, I guess, where we were thinking, this is going to be over in, you know, 3 months. It's 2020. We have scientists. We're as advanced as a culture as we've ever been. We're going to figure this out. It's going to be okay. And now it's just like, oh my gosh, like, hopefully this is done by 2022, you know, is kind of, there's just like a bleakness, I guess, like a hopelessness.
Yeah, it was that time when, I don't know how to say this 100% right, so just don't take me out of context, everyone, and that'll be cool. There was some novelties in the beginning of lockdowns and quarantines that I feel like everybody got kind of excited about.
Yeah.
Like, we had to relearn how to do the world.
Yeah.
And
it's a good way of thinking of it.
Like, I think about the number of FaceTime hangouts you did in April compared to the number of FaceTime hangouts you did in June.
Yeah.
Like, in April, it was like, whoa, we're still hanging out. Like, this is cool. Like, the number of, like, you know, virtual happy hours that you heard about, the number of virtual hangouts and game nights and things like that that people were doing. There was an eagerness to rise above this.
Yeah.
That I think is very American and is very, and generally I think is probably very human, but
it's like if we all just band together and social distance and stay at home and do Zoom meetings for a few months, everything's going to be okay. And we'll all feel good that we did our part to beat it.
And it almost felt like by doing some of those things, you were patriotic, you were caring for your neighbor, you were, you know, thinking about more than just yourself and your convenience. And so it made it almost, there was an element of excitement to it. It's not that it was an exciting time in any way, but there was something fulfilling about I am being part of the solution.
Like, it's like those stories of World War II where all the men went off to war and they were drafted and the women went into the factories and did the men's jobs. And it was kind of this idea of, like, everybody's playing their part. We're all pulling together.
Totally. Absolutely. It had that kind of feel to it. And then by June, I know for me, it was like, oh, so there's nothing I can do to fix this. Like it felt like my effort, and admittedly, I'm not putting like massive amounts of effort in or anything. I just put a mask on when I leave.
Right.
Like it felt like there was nothing I could do to change this. And there was no way where we were just going to find a, like if everybody just walks into a grocery store on their left foot, you know, like not that that would do anything, but like,
what if that was it? Scientists have discovered that if everybody walks to grocery stores specifically on their left foot, we can beat this thing by 2021.
Traveling now to Dr. Fauci. It turns out it's a right foot virus.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know. That was science, I guess. That's the closest this podcast is ever going to be to science.
There you go.
So you just witnessed the best. So there's a bleakness that settles in. This is just life now, but everything in you doesn't want to just accept that.
It's that meme of the dog sitting at the table with the flames all around him. And he's like, this is fine.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, it's been so depressing. And then we have the death of George Floyd and massive protests and racial riots. And, you know, for me, like just watching people on the internet descend into like the depths of division and arguments and hatred has been like so discouraging. You know, people in the church, like, oh, it's been so hard. Have you felt that way? Like that's part of the reason why June was so depressing. For me and my wife, we felt like literally like 60% of the time we normally would be spending hanging out or watching TV together or just like enjoying, just hanging out, just enjoying being with one another, right? It felt like the majority of that time was just laying on the couch, staring at our phone, scrolling through Instagram, not for fun, not for memes, not to see what's going on with our friends, but just to be like, wow, the world is terrible. Wow, it's even worse than I thought. Wow, people are hateful. Wow, people are divided. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and it was so hard to think through, what do I want to say in the middle of all of this? And that was when you and I started talking to one another. So part of just, I totally want to go right back to everything that you're talking about with George Floyd and all of that. But part of what had led us to slow down a little bit on this podcast was June was the month that my wife and I moved cross country.
Yeah.
And I actually had to ship my recording equipment back to New Jersey at the start of June. So I was disconnected from what I would actually be doing my recording with anyway. And then in the middle of, all right, recording would be slightly more difficult because of the technicalities. Then it became, oh, recording is going to be way more difficult because of what's going on in the country. And I know for me, I felt like my voice was not the needed voice.
Yeah.
I didn't. As the bleakness had kind of settled in around, I can't fix COVID and I won't fix COVID and I don't know the thing to say to help others fix COVID.
Yeah.
All of that found for me a much more visceral outlet with what was going on with George Floyd, because then it was everybody who feels like they need to say something is only speaking to one little piece of what's going on.
Right.
And I just, I didn't want to say something quickly.
Just for the sake of saying it.
Just for the sake of saying something and potentially miss pieces that were really important to talk about. I mean,
which is what a lot of podcasts do, to be fair. It's kind of like there's this pressure when you're doing a podcast to keep up with whatever's going on in the world. So it's like, okay, this happened on Friday, so on Monday we've got to talk about it. But a lot of times, if you haven't had time to really research and prep, you're really only just giving people your opinions. And sometimes that's not helpful, especially if you don't have a well-developed idea, you know, of what to talk about.
We're the podcast that did 7 episodes on the word righteous.
Yeah.
So we really like picking narrow topics and trying to hit them as exhaustively as possible because we don't want to contribute to the, well, we just turned the mics on and started talking. And
right.
And then you missed huge, important pieces of what was really going on. And
yeah.
What was fascinating to me was seeing the entire country's focus
yeah.
on an issue that had come up in other iterations within the last 5 to 10 years and had been, I think, generally ignored
well,
or dismissed as not problems by segments of the population.
And the other part of it, too, is it becomes everyone's focus. And so you're bombarded with yeah. everybody's opinion on it. So you have like really intelligent scholars who spend their time researching this all the time. You have pastors who like have a heart for this and want to like move into it and speak in a way that like reflects the biblical heart and mindset on it. And then you have mm-hmm. like your racist uncle who's, you know, not, it's a stereotype. I don't have a racist uncle. I assume that you don't have a racist uncle, but a lot of you listening probably do if stereotypes are true. So it's like, everybody is like, I must go on social media and make my voice heard about this. So it's like you get a lot of good and a lot of bad. And it's discouraging sometimes to learn that somebody that you know has a horrible way of thinking about this, you know?
And let's dive into that a little bit, because I know for me, a horrible way of thinking about this is not about making a conclusion about who or what police officers or black people are.
Yeah.
To me, a horrible conclusion is I know what's right and I am unwilling to listen to another side.
Yeah. And yeah. That, oh my gosh. Me, yes.
That's what we've been talking about just privately and now here on the podcast.
Like, yeah.
What was so discouraging was hearing pastors who, just because of who the pastors are that I know, are generally middle-aged white conservative men.
Yeah.
Speak for what they were thinking of as conservative values and missing the opportunity at times mm-hmm. to bring Jesus to a situation where whatever you think about the situation, somebody's pain
yeah.
was very, very present. You know, I tried to compare it a lot in my mind to pastoral counseling situations. Mm-hmm. And so much of what you do when you're counseling somebody, and I'm not claiming to be a counseling expert, so please don't hear it that way, but a lot of what you want to do is hear out a person's problem and validate what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, you want to show them that you see it the way that they do, or at least you see why they see it their way.
Yes, you can understand their perspective. Even though yes. you may not agree fully, you can say, yes. I see why you see it that way.
And then once you do that, you're able to help kind of say, well, what if we looked at it this other way? And you try to point them to something more biblical right. and more yeah. Jesus-focused and things along those lines. Let's just take a pastoral counseling situation where a woman comes to you and claims that they were sexually assaulted.
Mm, yeah.
That's a tough moment. That's mm-hmm. that's a hard thing to work through with somebody. That is a lot of listening, a lot of weeping with those who weep and mm-hmm. trying to empathize and be there for that person. No pastor hears that and initially thinks, am I sure this person was assaulted? Like we would never start there.
You know what though? Based on some of the Facebook groups I've been in, I tend to follow a lot of Facebook groups from people that mm-hmm. have been jaded by the church, because I truly want to understand their perspectives so that I can try to be a part of the solution to helping people not be as jaded with the church. I've seen a lot of people talk about how they went to their pastors about sexual abuse and they were basically like, well, what were you wearing? Like, maybe it was because you were dressing too promiscuously, or are you sure it was rape? Maybe it wasn't. Like a lot of women have been through that with churches.
You've just made a bad 2020 worse. I really thought that was a safe example, because I was like, of course you wouldn't do this. And no, apparently.
No, dude. Yeah, it just keeps getting worse than I ever give it
credit for. Yeah, oh man,
it's terrible. Sorry, I didn't mean to derail you.
No, that's
it's a problem.
That's a helpful caveat to point out. So, first off, if that was your experience, we are so sorry.
Yeah,
that is not what should have happened in that moment.
No, and not at all.
At all, and that's what I wish I could show people who immediately were dismissive yeah. of the concept of systemic racism. It's like, well, if somebody came to me and they claimed some kind of abuse, I would not immediately go to, I need to figure out how real the abuse is.
Yeah,
I would go to, I need to meet this person in their hurt and try to help them through to the other side.
Yeah. And the problem with it is no one wants to think about this on the individual level. Everybody is thinking about it from the most zoomed out level possible. Mm. So it's just like, how can we talk about the problem with all police officers? Cause they're all like this. Or, and then there's people who respond. It's like, well, actually it's not the problem with all police officers. It's the problem with all of the Black community. And here's the problem they need to fix. Yeah. And so it just becomes this shouting match where it's like, which group's problems are worthy of attention and which group's problems are actually an over-exaggeration. And no one wants to actually say, none of us should be trying to fix the big picture world problems completely because we can't as individuals. But as Christians, and for you and me as pastors, and for those of you guys listening, if you're a pastor listening or a Christian listening, we all have a responsibility to the people and the individuals in our community who rely on us, and we have to treat them as individuals. We have to look at their situations individually, and we do need to take all this big picture stuff into account. But we shouldn't be relying and building our thinking on statistics and data, like cold statistical analysis. We need to actually hear out the people that are struggling and say, I want to listen to you. I want to empathize with what you're going through. I want to see it from your perspective, even though it's not the perspective I grew up with. I want to hear you out and hear what you're dealing with, you know?
Absolutely. Completely agreed. And that becomes so dangerous when you look at any group of people. Like, one thing that both groups can sympathize with, both, and I'm using these very vaguely, but one thing that both conservatives and liberals can agree on is that they hate when they're told by the other side what they think when it doesn't line up with reality.
Yeah.
It happens both ways.
Yeah.
You know, conservatives get upset with liberals because they feel like they're told, you are the racist uncle.
Yeah.
You know, you're just the backwoods, stuck in the past.
Yeah.
Not willing to learn or change or update your thinking with the times. And
right.
And so many conservatives hear that and they think, that's not me at all.
Right.
You clearly haven't listened to me.
And then
on
the other side, it's like people who lean more left, they hate it when conservatives just classify them as like, you're all just a bunch of whiny snowflakes. If you just pulled up your pants and if you just stopped protesting and stopped trying to fix things and just, you know, buckled down and worked hard and applied yourself, then you wouldn't have any of these problems. And it's just so sad to see these oversimplifications and this unwillingness to listen to anybody's story. But I feel like it's like an ideological war. And so people treat it as like, you know, somebody shares a story on Instagram, right, of a Black person that's been through some sort of systemic racism, some sort of mistreatment from the police. And people on the right are like, oh, I can't let this be. Because if this is true, it's scoring points against my team. So they start digging into the past of the person. And how can I discredit the story? How can I say, well, actually, it's not the way that you're saying. And then on the other side of things, like, I've literally seen, dude, I'm a part of a Christian Facebook group that's full of Christians that are a little bit more, you know, progressive, a little bit more liberal. Mm-hmm. You know, those of you guys who have been listening to the show by now, you can probably tell I don't identify as a conservative or a liberal. And I'm way more comfortable now saying that after all of this stuff that's been going on. I'm kind of just out.
It feels like a much smarter place to be.
Yeah.
Now, having watched how June played itself out.
Literally for a long time, I was thinking, how am I going to tell people that I'm not really a left or a right person? And now it's just kind of the point where it's like, well, cat's out of the bag. But anyway, so I'm a part of a Facebook group just for analysis's sake of more progressive Christians, so I can get an angle on what their viewpoint is. And I've seen like somebody in that group shared a story about a cop that had been killed. And literally it was like Christians in this group. And they were just like, oh, that's just cop, pro cop propaganda. Get that out of here. Who cares about him? He knew what he was getting into when he took the job. And dude, it's just been breaking my heart
Oh, goodness.
To see I see Christians on the right and on the left doing this. It's all about scoring points in the ideology war, you know?
Yeah, it's like the only evidence that gets accepted in anything is anecdotal.
Yeah.
So you accept all of the anecdotes that
score points for your team.
Score points for you and make you feel like, yeah, I'm on the right side. And you reject every anecdote to the other side, which, like, just imagine if we did that with the Bible and if we took, like,
some people do,
some people do. But, like, imagine, like, we take the story of David and Bathsheba and we're like, whoa, whoa, like, David was a good king. Like, did you see what he did for the economy? Like, can we really trust Bathsheba? Like,
oh my gosh. If that happened today with David and Bathsheba, people would be questioning her so much.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. That's a whole, so it's like, there's so many topics we're talking about right now that could be full blown series.
I know.
We're just scratching the surface. Oh man. But that
to me is one of the beauties of the Bible. The Bible shows the followers of Jesus not as the perfect, beautiful camp you need to be part of, but the camp that's broken just like yours, but has found a bigger reason for commonality, a bigger reason for unity, and an ability to put other things aside, at least in part and in ideal.
Yeah.
That other camps don't really have any way to accomplish.
Yeah, no, totally. I agree. And that's been a big saving grace for me in this season of COVID and all this racial tension stuff is I'm like, okay, this is terrible. This is the most terrible it's been in my lifetime, in my 31 years. But if I look at the story of history and the story of the Bible, there's been so many other times in history where horrible things like this were happening and the church got through it and we survived and the gospel was still preached. So, you know, Brian, you were talking about the reality of how everybody has felt a need to say something in this moment and how you've kind of held back a little bit, which I think is wise. I've actually been saying things in this moment, but I just want to share my heart about why I have. So in June, you know, for those of you guys who listen to this podcast, and I doubt that many of you are like, when is a new episode going to come out? If you're like me, you listen to so many podcasts that you hardly notice when one of your favorites doesn't post one. But, you know, the reason that Brian and I are one of the reasons that I specifically didn't podcast very much in June was because I feel just like Brian, I'm sure you do. I feel there are specific callings that I have on my life. And one of those is encouragement. One of those is evangelism. But a third one that's really important to me is peacemaking. I consider the ministry of peacemaking something I'm called to. And I don't have like an official peacemaking ministry. Like, let me teach you the way, you know, let me
Aaron,
teach you.
7 steps to peace.
Right. Peace in the Middle East. No, like I can't. I don't know how to fix racial tensions in America. I don't know how to stop racism. But what I do feel like I know is how to be a peacemaker in this moment. So what I've been doing is instead of podcasting, I've just been doing a lot of thinking and a lot of writing. When all of the racial stuff happened, you know, it was very discouraging. It was very overwhelming. But the thing that I had on my heart was instead of jumping on the mic and recording a bunch of things, I thought I just need to take time to sit and observe what's going on, to listen to perspectives from all over the place, to think deeply about that and pray about it, and then to do some writing. And, you know, I felt like God stirred my heart towards in June asking, how can I best use what God has given me to do ministry in this moment? And I felt God kind of gently prod me towards social media ministry. And so I've just been writing stuff on my posts and stuff on my stories. And basically what I've been trying to do strategically is to really challenge people both on the left and the right, which is where I see a lot of my friends falling. They're either posting very far left things on their stories or very far right things on their stories. You know, everything from like, people I see this a lot with younger people, especially like former students of mine. If you're listening, guys, I love you. But I've seen like, you know, some very kind of progressive mentality memes floating around where it's just like, yeah, every white person is a racist and here's why. And every, you know, just this like a lot of shame, a lot of guilt. And then I've seen other people, and I've actually seen some of my other former students who they come from more conservative families, and they're posting, you know, like Ben Shapiro and Candace Owens and Charlie Kirk and a lot of these conservative pundits that are just like, systemic racism doesn't exist and black people just need to stop being this and that, and then their problems would be solved. And all the things that people are posting, it's so aggressive and it's filled with like no nuance, and it's just so radically divisive, I think. And so my heart posture has been, man, I want to be a voice that can speak into this moment and just call people to peacemaking, to just call people to consider another perspective. You know, for me, I think that racism is still a massive problem in our world and our country, you know, because of the existence of sin. And so we're seeing manifestations of racism, manifestations of division, of hatred, this radical hatred of the police, this radical hatred and mistrust of all white people in general, which then leads to a reaction where white conservatives despise anybody with any sort of liberal bent. It's this endless chain reaction that people are having right now, where it's just, I hate this person, I hate that person, I hate this group, I hate that group. You know, people calling people racist, people hating the people who are calling them racist, people talking about racism, people hating that people are talking about racism. It's just like this crazy spiral. So yeah, I've just been writing a ton, and I haven't in a few weeks, but in June, I basically every week was writing things. And I got a lot of feedback from people. I was surprised, but I got a lot of feedback from people who were like, dude, you know, you're not solving racism, but you're really helping me think about this in a balanced way. And you're pointing me towards peacemaking and not getting wrapped up in these divisive fights, but actually just talking to people. Because I think that's where the work is going to be done right now, is not in saying, I'm going to make the Facebook post that changed the world with my opinion, but more like, how can I learn how to, as a white person, talk to a black person and learn from their experience? You know, if I'm more conservative, how can I talk to a more liberal person? If I'm a liberal person, how can I talk to a more conservative person? How can we all talk to one another in a way that's productive, instead of just saying, our group is right, their group is wrong, we're the good guys, they're the bad guys? That's just the mentality I'm seeing. So, you know, I'm just trying to listen to the Holy Spirit and fight for peacemaking and try to point people not towards the left or right, but to Jesus and his ethic and morality and his heart for things like racial reconciliation and healing and unity in areas of division, and for people all over the political spectrum to like lay down their political idols and follow Jesus. So that's been my June.
That's great, man. I think that's so cool, because it's not coming from a, like, there's a lot of people trying to work towards peace, as long as peace is everyone agreeing that their perspective is correct.
Right. Yeah.
So there's a lot of people on the right who are putting things out to say, listen, liberals, like, we get that you're all upset and all that, but if you just read these 10 statistics, then you'll learn that you're actually wrong. And it's like, it's coming from a less aggressive tone sometimes, but it's still trying to say you are incorrect and you need to see your incorrectness. And this is happening both ways. And so I love that what you're doing isn't, here's the perspective on this issue that you need to arrive at, but rather you're coming from a, what Jesus calls his people to be is peacemakers. So whatever side you're beginning from, that is less important than Jesus's call for you to be a peacemaker. So how can you learn whatever your starting point and whatever the other person's starting point is, how can you learn to make peace with that person and help them turn around and become agents of peace as well?
Yeah, dude, that's so it. And I hate the division right now. It bothers me so much that, you know, one big part of it, and I'm hoping we can do some episodes soon where we get into like the nitty gritty of some of this stuff, but I just want to bring it up. I've seen pastors that I know who are good, godly men, and they definitely would lean more conservative, definitely theologically conservative, but traditionally, you know, they would be conservative guys historically. But some of these guys have started just speaking out about the realities of racism, like saying, hey, racism still exists. And actually, in some ways, it can be systemic. And let's talk about that. And they have had people in their church straight up just leave their church, saying, oh, my pastor is now, he's been co-opted by the progressive social justice warrior agenda.
Yeah, don't bring social justice to the pulpit.
Oh, dude. Yeah, we should do a whole episode about that idea, because that's the thing. I was talking to a pastor about this who I think he's doing this really well. And he was talking about how it's a generational difference a lot of times. And he was saying that he actually was talking with his dad, him and his wife were over at his dad's house. And his dad's also in ministry, and they were basically having like a little disagreement about systemic racism, because to my friend, he was saying, when I think of systemic racism, I think that there are systems in our country that are broken in different parts and places, and that produces some effects that are racist. But the way that the dad thought of systemic racism is, when he heard that term, he thought, you're saying that the entire country is racist and all law enforcement is racist and all judges are racist and the Constitution itself is racist. And that's how, like, there's this gap between how people are hearing words and how people are interpreting words. And a lot of that has to do with how the media presents that stuff. If you're an older conservative person and you've only heard of the term systemic racism or social justice, you've only really heard of it the way that Fox News pundits talk about it, which is a very negative way. And there's good reasons why they talk about those things in a negative way, because I would say that the extreme progressive left in our country has redefined those terms in ways that can be incorrect at times. But the truth is often found in the middle, and it's often found in a balanced look at both things. But the problem is that people want to just throw out terms, and the minute you talk about something that doesn't fit their definition, they're just going to write you off and say, oh, you're a liberal now, you know, which is what I hate. I hate that we can't have a conversation about this. Even some of the stuff I was posting, you know, if you know me, I'm not a liberal guy. I'm not a conservative guy. I grew up more conservative. So morally, a lot of stuff that I believe falls more on that spectrum. But I have an open mind and I'm trying to learn from both views. But there was things that I was saying where I had one guy in the comment section who was like, oh, you're just a social justice Marxist leftist. And I'm like, what? No, like, I'm not at all. But I am someone who believes that there are still lingering effects in our country of all of these broken things that happened in the past. And it's not wrong for us to acknowledge them and try to address them and work through them. But it's like people don't want that right now. They don't want any nuance. They just want concrete, black and white, no pun intended, answers.
Yeah, people don't seem to have the time for nuance. They don't have the time to dive in and engage deeply. And at the very least, I think the way that people consume most media, like think about the way that people consume social media.
Yeah.
The longest you're spending on any given post, 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Maybe a minute if they use the full time that Facebook or Instagram gave them without, right, you know, going onto IGTV or something like and your average time spent engaging with any post. I'm sure that other people have these numbers, but I don't know what they are, but they have to be really small.
Yeah.
And they're definitely not giving you the amount of time that you need to really process something through.
Right.
And so when you see super, and part of it, I think, is why you get these super right wing and super left wing memes, because they're like, all right, we have, you know, 2 seconds to engage with your attention. Let's just say something really bold, and then maybe in your mind you'll tone it down to what's really true, or maybe they just really have come to believe it. So we spend most of our time giving micro engagement to these very radicalized views.
Yeah.
And we spend little to no time actually thinking through what middle grounds might really look like. And
yeah.
And part of why we have different views is so that we can find a good common ground in the middle. You know, we need to be able to see things from both sides, and we need to be able to come to a conversation willing to learn.
Yeah. And I feel like there's place for black and white dogmaticness at times, but I also think it has to be balanced with some nuance. Like, I'll just give an example. Like, I'm at the point where I'm so convinced that abortion is morally wrong. It is absolutely the taking of an innocent life. So I mean, I'm pretty firm on that, and I'm not ashamed to say that. On the flip side, I really think that we need to treat the women that are struggling with, should I get an abortion, especially if they've been like raped or something like that. We need to treat them with so much compassion, and there needs to be so much nuance there. We need to be willing to talk to them, not at them, like, you horrible person, how dare you get an abortion? We need to, as ministry people, as Christians, be willing to reach out to those people and connect with them and try to win them over to the correct way of thinking about it. But it's going to take a ton of compassion. And mm-hmm. so it's like, that's where the balance is, you know? But I just feel like a lot of times we don't have that balance.
Yeah. A lot of times we don't put ourselves in the situations where we need to listen through something yeah. like that. Like most of the time, I think when people are talking about polarizing issues, systemic racism, the proper way to handle the coronavirus crisis, abortion, you know, the topics along those lines. Most of the time when people are talking about those things, they're talking with people they already agree with.
Yeah.
And so any nuance that they're thinking through or discovering is nuance of why my position is already right.
Yeah, the echo chamber. Do you remember that video I sent you? It's this great song by
it was so good.
The Gregory Brothers, and it's a millennial and then a boomer, and they're singing this duet together, and it's basically like, why can't you understand? The lyrics go, meet me in the middle of my side because I'm right. I might actually play a clip here.
How did it ever come down to this? How could I have been so blind? My right-wing uncle just doesn't understand, but maybe this will change his mind. A steaming pile of socialist crap. I don't know my nephew anymore, but I've got the perfect response to finally win this Facebook comment war. He must be lonely, always being wrong, typing in the dark with no pants on. Can we compromise? Can we harmonize? Come together, see eye to eye. Will you meet me in the middle of my side since I'm right? Let's just agree to agree with me and stop this silly fight. Try to think outside your box, come bathe in my inside. We can meet in the middle of my side since I'm right.
It's exactly what people are doing today. It's the only way to find compromises for you to compromise what you came to this conversation believing and come meet me where I am.
Yeah.
And it doesn't bring us anywhere. And no. I think that one of the things that always fascinates me is looking at the way that Jesus met with people that lived in ways that if those people showed up to churches, it would be really, really easy for them to feel judged and pushed to the margin and not cared for. And in many cases, those people would probably be right. And yet yeah. Jesus was called their friend.
Yeah.
It's not that he just showed up and like was their teacher or was their corrector or yelled at them to try to make them change their mind or right. tagged them in memes that were on the opposite side of their current leanings.
Yeah.
He wasn't any of those things to them. He was their friend.
He was doing the work of personally connecting with people. That's the thing that blows me away, too, is on the big scale of things, Jesus connected with everybody through his work on the cross. Mm-hmm. But when he was living his life and doing his ministry on earth, which how many years did he do ministry officially? Like, wasn't it four?
I think it was three or four.
Which is insane to think that we have been in ministry longer than Jesus was technically in ministry officially. Mm-hmm. Like that's... That blows my mind that what he accomplished in those 3 or 4 years. But for him, he wasn't like, I need to fix all of the problems. He was like, nope, God has specifically called me to this demon possessed woman and Matt Levi, the tax collector, and Zacchaeus. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, do you get what I'm saying? Like he wasn't like, I need to go and fix the problem of prostitution in Jerusalem and end it. He was like, no, I've been called to go minister to this group of prostitutes. Mm-hmm. He can like so often I feel like we have this burden where it's like we must figure out how to fix society's problems perfectly, which none of us can do on our couches posting memes. But it's like we focus so much on trying to fix and solve the world's problems through posting opinions and memes that we neglect that maybe we're called in our life in our whole lifetime to just affect five people that have been affected by that problem. And we help the what God is doing in their life specifically, you know?
And even just thinking that so little of what Jesus did was giving people long lists of reasons why what they were doing was wrong. Mm. Instead, it was your missing connection with God. I want to help you find it. We'll deal with everything else later.
Yeah.
And he, I remember talking about like there's certain Christians that are just always posting about how other people are wrong and how, you know, they're looking at different church leaders and they're like, this church leader, you know, did gluten-free communion. Do they not care about the symbol of Christ's body? And like they could just get like super granular and just like be pointing things out that they perceive as wrong in other churches or whatever.
We preach the theology of gluten.
Yeah, exactly. So like whatever it happens to be. And I was talking about
we have Calvinists and we have glutenists. I'm sorry. I just had to keep going with the joke.
I love it. This could go on a lot longer and I would not be frustrated by it. But I was talking about those kinds of people.
I want to make another joke so bad, but I can't think of one.
Oh, man.
Sorry to let you down.
That's fine.
Sorry to let you down, audience.
What's okay, crazy keep, was keep I really felt like you were breaking the fourth wall. Like
I did.
I could feel that like from the beginning of that sentence, I knew that that wasn't for me.
I wanted every audience member to just imagine me staring into their eyes while I said that.
I've missed this so much.
I love you.
I love it. Okay. I was talking about there are Christians that are just very hypercritical. They're always pointing out things that they perceive as being wrong in the government, things that they perceive as being wrong in other churches. And you already have a name in mind, I'm imagining. So that person. And one of the things that I found so frustrating, I said, some people are so focused on pointing out what's wrong mm-hmm. that they don't ever spend any time pointing out how people can be made right.
Oh, yeah. Preach.
And that's what's so frustrating. Like Jesus did not go around saying, here's all the ways you're wrong. Because like I remember I was quick youth group story. I remember I was teaching at the youth group that I used to lead in New Jersey. It was a middle school youth group. And I was coming towards the end of a teaching and I was like, I just need to give these kids the gospel and give them a chance to respond to it.
Yep.
So I started moving into that. And one of the things that I was always thinking about with junior high students was not explaining things just in the most theological or biblically used terms, but trying to take those terms and make them helpful for students.
Yeah.
So we're talking about how everyone is a sinner. And the way that I talked about it was I said something to the effect of, you know how when like we're all broken inside, like, yep. You know how when you really think about who you are on the inside, like you just know that something is wrong, right? Like you just know that you're not perfect. You know that something is broken, that something is missing.
Yeah.
And that was how I tried to, in that moment, explain the idea of sinfulness. Like we were made to be perfectly like Jesus. We've missed that mark.
Yep.
And what was fascinating was as I was saying it, I watched everyone start looking down and I watched everyone like start hunching over. And it was like it was hitting everyone where they were like, oh, yeah, like that thing that I try not to talk about, that brokenness that I feel and carry with me. You're pointing that out, right? I know exactly what that is. And I think that like whenever we're talking with people, we very rarely do you find someone who is not aware of their own brokenness. And so when we're talking to people about different things, like we don't need to start with, did you know that you're wrong? Because like if they're honest about how they perceive themselves, they are aware that something has gone wrong.
Yeah.
They are aware that they have not figured it out and that they are not a perfect person. So rather than starting with, I need to convince you that you're broken.
Yeah.
I think most people are there already.
Yeah.
We need to start with, hey, you know that really bad broken feeling we all have? Did you know that there's a way out of it?
Yeah.
Like we need to start there and show people there is a path towards wholeness. Yes. And it's not, did you vote the way that I did? It's, do you know the God that I know?
Yeah, that's so good. I know a guy who, he used to do a lot of street witnessing down in San Francisco, where you have people who, you know, generally there's a lot of sexualities there that are different mm-hmm. from the biblical standard, you know, of man and woman. There's, you know, actually a lot of different sexualities. And his strategy and the strategy of the people that he witnessed with wasn't, let's go around and tell everybody biblically why they're in sin and why they're wrong and why their entire lifestyle is, you know, a slap in the face to God. His strategy was, I just want to tell these people about Jesus, and I want to introduce them to Jesus, and I want them to come to Christ. And then I'm confident that if they do, the Holy Spirit is going to do the work to change them over time to his image. And that's going to mean not just their sexuality coming under his authority, but everything in their life. All, like, you know, the sexuality thing was very out in the open on the surface. You could tell based on the way people were dressed, right? So it's like, to a lot of people, that's the most glaring problem because it's right out there in the open. But what about what's in the heart? You know, everybody that comes to Christ, whether they are, you know, somebody who on the outside looks like they have all of the quote unquote right things going on, they could have so many internal sins going on behind the scenes and underneath the surface. And Jesus wants to deal with all of that in all of us. And so the goal isn't to find someone and say, your entire way of life is wrong, and here's why you can't have a relationship with God until you fix all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. It's come to Jesus broken as you are, and allow him to fix you progressively over time. And that's really how I've tried to do evangelism myself, is I don't go around to people trying to prove to them that they're sinners, because I truly think that most people already know. But I do want to tell them about my own sin and the struggle of my sin and how it's affected me in my life and how I needed a savior and what having that savior has done in my life in relationship to my own sin. And that kind of framing, I feel like, is so much more redemptive for people, because it gives hope. It's like, here's somebody giving their testimony of how Jesus rescued them from sin, and it's showing me how I also can be rescued.
Yeah, one of the things that's interesting with that is it's not like anybody is just one sin away from being perfect already. And yet sometimes we really focus on that one sin that we see in their life. Like, do you and Brooklyn ever play Perfect in Every Way But?
No.
Okay. You might like have a different name for it. Like, it's not something that Tori and I invented or anything. But we'll say, like, you know, would you date someone, they're perfect in every way, but they have this problem? Or like,
it's kind of like, would you rather, but yeah, or, with a or dating, like, component.
Or like in marriage, you can make it really high stakes. Like, I'm exactly the same, but my hands are where my feet are and my feet are where my hands are. Are we still married? You know, like we like playing that kind of a thing.
Hopefully the answer is always yes.
No, it's the high stakes version of the game is like all
I'll say. If we wake up the next morning and I'm suddenly Hitler, it's like, do you stay married to me? Probably not.
Yeah, that's one of the easier no's.
Like, I'm not talking about like ideologically I've become Hitler. I'm talking about like you wake up and you look next to me and it's literally Adolf Hitler. And it's like you look at the pictures on the wall and it's always been Adolf Hitler, you know, like one of those weird Twilight Show things where it's like...
So the thing that I love about this game is that normally you're diving at what's the subtlest difference.
I just went to the most extreme.
And you went to the most extreme. Like, I've asked, like, I'm exactly the same, but I could never grow fingernails.
I'd still stay married to you if I was Tori.
And that was her answer too. But like, yeah. It's, I enjoy trying to think like how slightly off do I need to be? I never jumped to.
Do you watch Seinfeld?
I love Seinfeld.
It's totally like George and Jerry would always be dating women and then they would drop them for like the slightest thing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like did you know she bites her fingernails?
Yeah.
She's a biter, Jerry. Bite her.
She's got man hands. We enjoy playing that game. I highly recommend you play that as well. It's just fun. But like, it's not like any person is in the scenario of like, they're perfect in every way, but they don't follow God's ethic for sexuality, or they don't follow God's ethic for telling the truth or whatever. Like, sin is such a complex problem.
Yeah.
It runs so much deeper than any obviously addressable surface level issue or yeah. obviously apparent, I should say. Like surface level, meaning you can see it on the surface, not like it's just a surface problem that somebody has. Like sin ruins things on such a more dramatic level. Mm. And sometimes we think that the problem that people have is the specific kind of sin that they're stuck in. Instead of remembering like, no, the problem is that they are sinful, which means they are internally broken. And thinking about, you know, the famous preacher verse, you know, the heart is desperately wicked and it's deceitful.
Yeah.
Who can know it? You know, yeah. I think NLT phrases it, who can really understand how bad it is?
Yes.
And that's one of the big issues. We don't even recognize how fully broken we are. And so when we teach the idea of you can find wholeness, it's so much bigger than you can get past that sin that I don't like in you.
Right.
It's rather you can be free from the way that sin warps you, not completely yet, but you can be free from it and you can move more and more towards freedom as you know Jesus more and more. That becomes a completely different offer
yeah.
than Jesus will help you see this one thing differently. It's he'll help you see everything differently.
We should probably stop the conversation here. We've been talking for quite a long time, and I know for our listeners, you're probably used to a little bit more structure, episodes having consistent themes. This has just been a lot of verbal processing from us, but it's been a good conversation.
Yeah, this has been everything bottled up that normally what we would have done is write some of this down and create some structure like Aaron was saying and kind of present it to you that way. But to make sure that we were able to jump into some of these conversations, I felt like this was a fun way to do it. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I think you enjoyed it, Aaron.
I did.
And hopefully you enjoyed it, audience.
Breaking the fourth wall. There it is.
I can do it too.
Yeah, for those of you guys listening, we're so blessed that you listen. Honestly, when we started this, I had been doing like 4 other podcasts and through Good Lion, you know, just throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks. Most of the stuff that I did got, you know, maybe 30 or 40 people listening to it. This show has between 250 and 300 people that actually listen regularly. And so for those of you guys who do listen and you're fans of this show, thank you so much. It's super encouraging that you tune in every episode we put out. I've heard from several people that this show is blessing them. I've even heard from some senior pastors who are like, the stuff you guys say really helps me think about the stuff in culture and I appreciate it. And I was just like, oh my gosh, like we're just 2 former youth pastors. That's a huge honor that we're helping some senior pastors with what they're doing. So yeah, I love doing this, man. Brian and I've already been talking about doing this more and getting back on here and just getting on the mic and sharing our hearts. And I just wanted to thank you guys who listened to this. The end.
Only Aaron wants to thank you. I could take you or leave you.
Keep that in. That's gold. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Good Lion Podcast. If you like our show, please take a minute to give us a review on iTunes. It seriously helps so much. The more reviews we get, the more people will find us. And so if you want to help the show, please just go on iTunes and leave a quick review. We also love questions from listeners and we love to do episodes focused on questions. So if you have a question and you want us to talk about on the show, send it to our email address, which is goodlionnetwork@gmail.com. Send us a question. We'd love to talk about it on the show. The Good Lion Podcast is a production of the Calvary Global Network, and it's produced by myself, Aaron Salvato, and my co-host, Brian Higgins. Our show is a part of the Good Lion Podcast Network, a network of Christian podcasters that Brian and I started with our friends. Check out our website, goodlion.io, where you can find a ton of other Christ-centered, encouraging, and equipping podcasts. Our goal with this ministry is to reach people all over the world with Christ-centered content that helps them as they walk closer with Jesus. If you like what we do and you want to support us, go to goodlion.io/support. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.